Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Update for Russell. Vito's asleep. I think our producer Jody is hooked. Anyway, check out our weekly web video picks. Every week we pick five pieces from YouTube and elsewhere online, and I host them in a picks video. This week's videos include a computer animation of Flight 1549 landing in the Hudson, and that is accompanied by the actual audio from the cockpit and air traffic control. It is really fascinating. Go to WNYC.org/video for our weekly online video picks. And life in New York is a life led with smells. New Yorkers are familiar with odors, good and bad. We all know that the smell of the subway is a certain kind of smell, the smell of the bagel shop, that no longer mysterious maple syrup smell, remember that, which wafts over the Upper West Side every once in a while. And of course, we're all familiar with the biggest stink of all, the New York Knicks. Ha, just kidding. But seriously, while we New Yorkers may have highly attuned noses, the federal government is now just starting to think seriously in Washington about the power of smell and throwing some money at a particular kind of olfactory research, body odor. New York-based writer Dave Johns wrote a piece that appeared in Slate yesterday about how the Department of Homeland Security is researching the so-called odor print. The idea is that you can help solve crimes by tracing the distinct body odor that all of us have. Dave Johns, I'll say welcome back to WNYC, because some of our listeners may remember you used to be on our show Fair Game. Hello.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be here.
So isn't this what bloodhounds have been doing all along?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it sounds really strange when you first think about it that everybody has their own unique BO, essentially, that is as unique as your fingerprint or your DNA, so they say. But in fact, we've been using this technology as a biometric for 700 years. These bloodhounds have been hunting down people, and with some success, for a long time. But they do have their problems, namely that they can't tell us how they do what they do. So we're trying to figure it out.
Plus, I read, maybe in your article, that the best dogs can match scents with 85% accuracy, and poorly trained or feeble-nosed dogs may do no better than chance.
That's right. So 85% under best conditions, best trained dogs. But sometimes, or very often, dogs are not optimally trained. Their handlers may inadvertently lead them. They say that the clues can transfer down the leash to the dog where to choose. So it's but the main thing is in the courts, these dogs can't testify. They can't tell us, oh, I smelled this guy. I know it was this guy.
Does each human being have an odor print that's as distinct as a fingerprint or a DNA?
Well, that's what we believe. I mean, that's what scientists believe, that there are these things called odor prints or human scent signatures, which are totally distinct and unique to the individual. We're trying to figure out sort of what are the components that make up that scent. And it's sort of we think that it's probably a range of ratios of compounds that are common to most people. So it's more a ratio of what the smells are that are in there that clue you into the individual.
And your piece is full of fascinating and slightly disturbing terms. We talked about odor print. There's also the armpit effect. And I'll resist the urge to make another joke at the expense of the Knicks about how the armpit effect is what happens when Nate Robinson tries to go for a rebound. So just tell us what it is.
So the armpit effect is this idea. It's a little bit controversial in scientific circles, but it's the idea basically that animals can distinguish strangers from kin based on scent alone. So they'll take squirrels, for example, and they'll separate them from birth and then introduce kin to them later on or introduce the smell of kin and see whether they can basically tell friend or kin from stranger based on smell alone. And there's evidence that people can maybe do this too. We actually can distinguish. Mothers can smell their own babies. Babies can tell their own mothers by smell. And we can also sort of tell which of two smells are more likely to be identical twins. Identical twins should smell alike, theoretically.
Do they? Is there evidence?
Well, yeah. So human beings, at a rate better than chance, can, if presented with a bunch of smells, can say, yeah, I think these two are the identical twins, at a rate better than chance. Not perfect, but we're no bloodhounds here.
And in fact, the bulk of your piece centers around your attempts to trace your family tree through the sweat from your palms using odor forensics.
Right, exactly.
How'd that pan out?
So I mean, my idea was if this is sort of some sort of biometric marker, then maybe it could work like DNA, whereby I would share a smell with my father and maybe with my mother and also with other family members. So I found a criminal forensic scientist who works on odor printing, and we obtained scent samples from a bunch of my family members, including my father, my mother, myself, two cousins who are identical twins, and my uncle, and then sent them all these samples. He works with hand scent because that's useful for, you know, drawing scent from murder weapons and whatnot. And then he ran this analysis and tried to create basically a family tree based on these scents. So it was imperfect. We'll say that. I mean, that's one of the problems with scent is that you can't see it. Contamination happens so easily. And the way the tree sort of turned out, one of my cousins smelled almost 94% identical to my mother. So my mother and my cousin smelled almost completely identical, whereas my cousin and his identical twin brother smelled slightly less similar in this. So that seemed like a little bit of a problem.
Has there been any example yet of an odor print being used as a piece of evidence in court?
Well, it's used frequently as a piece of evidence with canine evidence, but not an actual odor print in terms of the way that scientists are trying to analyze it nowadays.
So if there is such a thing as an odor print, and they're trying to classify it and categorize it and use it in police work, then they have to come up with descriptors. And I see that you come complete with the body odor wheel.
That's right. Yeah.
And right in the middle, this is a wheel. It's a target. It's concentric circles. Right in the middle is a picture of a nose with the words body odor. But the point being that there are different kinds of human scents. And so you've got all these terms for them, and I'll just go down some of them. Wet dog, fishy, gasoline, goaty, rancid butter, cheesy, passion fruit. People have body odor that smells like passion fruit.
I mean, you know, this is what we would hope to smell like. Essentially, what this is there's a tradition in wine and beer and foods to come up with these aromatic wheels, aroma wheels, which describe all of the notes, all of the flavors within them.
So this is like when the wine taster says, "Oh, it's got a woody."
It's a
flavor.
Little oaky, you know. Yeah. This is sort of the same idea with body odor, and you know, it's very preliminary. We'll say that, but just this past January, some research, a Swiss firm. Found out or discovered that there's sort of a ratio of chemicals which causes male armpit sweat to smell slightly more cheesy and rancid than female sweat, which smells more kind of like passion fruit or grapefruit. These are subtle ratios of these sulfur-containing compounds that cause these smells to be slightly. I mean, and male and female armpits do differ. There's more of certain kinds of glands in male armpits and whatnot.
This just to say that women smell better than men, or don't you want to place a value judgment?
Well, it's interesting because men sweat more, and they have more of the bacteria in their armpits that smell, that create the stinkiest smells. But actually, if you get up close to the subjective smells of some of these female scents, then people find the female scent more unpleasant. In fact, despite the fact that it's described as smelling like grapefruit, it's determined to be more unpleasant. The male smell is considerably stronger.
Dave Johns, my guest on WNYC, New York-based writer who has a piece in Slate this week about federal funding for odor print research so they can actually use people's individual smells in law enforcement. So here's a post on our website from Robin. It says, I have two labs, Labrador Retrievers, one raised in New York City, the other raised in the country in Westchester County. The second dog has spent her life running around in the woods behind her home. I have never seen dog number one use his nose for any search purposes. When dog number two was about 6 months old, however, I watched from the window, this is the country dog, as she lifted her nose, sniffed the air, sniffed the pavement, and then tracked my husband into the garage. She continues to use her nose to find us, both inside and outside the house. Our city dog just sniffs around.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a perfect example. Some dogs, it's like, I think my dad has a terrific nose. I think he smells all kinds of stuff around the house. I smell very little. So my dad has a better nose than I do. Some dogs have better noses than others. And but there are these fantastical stories about dogs, you know, hunting down criminals over trails that are hundreds of hours cold, you know, like these amazing tales of bloodhounds that can do these, purportedly do these things, whether the lore or reality is another matter.
I think the same thing happens to human beings, by the way. I mean, I love living in the city, but I think you lose touch with your senses to some degree, with your ability to experience natural phenomenon in the world.
No, definitely. In fact, there was a study out in Berkeley, I believe, not too long ago, where they tested undergraduates, their ability to trail a chocolate scent through this field. And so these undergraduates got down on their hands and knees and did their best to sniff out this trail and follow it. And they actually did pretty well. They were surprised to find that human beings, when you actually put your nose to the ground and get busy doing the smelling, you do a fairly good job.
Lorenzo from our page asks, isn't body odor affected by what you eat or drink or smoke? For example, if you eat fenugreek or garlic, it usually comes out in your sweat?
Definitely true. Definitely true. So that's why if you look at the wheel, the sort of part that has the gender gradations are only in these areas that they've discovered these differences in smell. And the rest of it is made up of almost entirely dietary things. So you know, like you said, you know, garlic, mint comes out in your sweat, turmeric, you know, cumin powder, vinegar, alcohol, a lot of different things will come out in your sweat.
Right. And those are all on the body odor wheel. And we've posted a link to it, by the way, because we figure after this conversation, you want to see this body odor wheel for yourself. And you can do that at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And it was interesting to see all the particular spices and other foodstuffs that are listed here as types of human smell. And we're not talking about the smell on your breath. We're talking about the smell that emanates from your body. So cumin is one, turmeric, as you said, vinegar, chili, mint, asparagus. People's sweat smells like asparagus.
Yeah, I mean, that's
is that if you eat asparagus?
Yeah, you eat asparagus, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So I mean, that's one of the tricks for these people who are trying to determine what your odor print is that there are all these confounding factors that cause your scent. There are all these other scents that do come through, whether it's from beauty products or from what you've eaten. So they have to figure out what are the chemicals within this bouquet that are indicative of the individual, that are actually the part of the odor print and are not environmental, are not dietary.
So for you, I mean, there's this old adage about smell being the most evocative of the senses. I don't know if you're a full-time, you know, smell correspondent, but do you now tend to believe that after doing this story? Where does it rank for you alongside sight or touch or hearing?
Get into the end of the story into this question of whether now we have to preserve our right to protect our right to odor privacy. Because, you know, if these are biometric, you know, scents that we're wafting around us all the time and they can be used to identify us, are there Fourth Amendment concerns there? And my conclusion, basically, in the end, based on the experiment in which we encountered a fair amount of contamination, is that, you know, it's so hard to pin down where a smell came from. I mean, we had that in New York with the maple syrup smell that until we kind of really nail down the science a little better, I don't think that these, you know, we have to worry about mechanical hounds chasing at our feet, you know, trying to sniff us down.
That maple syrup smell, which, like Lorenzo's question about body odor, came from fenugreek.
Right,
so
exactly.
Maybe now the cops are going to have to start odor profiling people, and there are going to be civil rights movements and all of that. Well, very interesting article on Slate by Dave Johns about odor research for criminal forensics. Thanks a lot for coming on with us.
Thank you.
Megan Ryan, Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, and Paige Cowett produced this program. Annie Schreffler is our Uncommon Economics editor. We had intern help from Kira Feldman, and that's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. What's that? I know that. I recognize that smell. I don't know. I'm Brian Lehr.